Hi, I am Dave Moss. I am an investigative researcher and activist at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. We are a nonprofit based in San Francisco that defends civil liberties in the increasingly digital world. This includes free speech, privacy, innovation. I've been asked to moderate this panel. I was on it last year. I don't have kids myself. Where I come from, this is probably a little bit unique, but I will talk about that more after we've done more introductions, and I'll go ahead and pass it to the left.
Good evening, and well, guess maybe not evening. Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sarah Avraham. I'm an attorney licensed to practice in the state of Georgia. A little bit of homework I have to do with every panel that I do. I am here to talk about legal issues, but I cannot give legal advice, so this does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. With that being said, I have a practice here in Stowe Mountain, Georgia that pretty much specializes in alternative lifestyles of all sorts, but this is something that a panel that I'm really glad to be on because I am the proud mother of a seven-month-old boy. And so this is a subject that touches me a great deal. My specialties are family law as well as criminal law, and I'm just really glad to be here. My information will be on the EFF site if anybody needs to get in contact with me. But it's my last name, law.com, for those of you that are taking notes.
Hey, hello, my name's Katech. I'm the assistant director here at the EFF, at the EFF Forms Track. And let's see, I spent 4 years as a IT assistant teacher at high school in the 90s. I've worked at ARM. I've got three kids between 11 and 18, so I've got a lot of practical experience as well. And my day job is I'm a researcher with Torrent Freak, so I've got a lot of experience as well with site blocking and many of the tools, not just used by parents, but also by governments to try and block people from accessing certain sites. So that's kind of one of the things I do.
Hey, my name is Jeff Turnersazen. I'm a technical consultant with ACI Worldwide, which is a payments company. I've got a bachelor's in political science and two masters in cybersecurity and MIS. I've been doing this for a while, presenting here for a while, and things like online family safety and whatnot and privacy are a big thing for me. So thank you for coming.
Yay. So I can talk a little bit about where I come from on this issue. At EFF, we are very, very skeptical of issues related to privacy when it comes to both the government as well as private institutions. I'm not going to be able to give advice on, you know, what kind of parental, you know, software you might use, or you know, what you should do to, you know, keep your kids from visiting certain things, or how to avoid predators, or anything like that. What I can tell you about is that many of the things that to protect your children would be the same things that you would use to protect yourself. There are privacy plugins for your browser. We offer some called HTTPS Everywhere and Privacy Badger that block third-party trackers. There are other ones like AdAware and Ghostery and other those sort of things that everyone should be using, and you should make sure your children are using that on their browsers as well. One of the things that is I've noticed and our organization has noticed over the last few years is issues related to the type of advice that government agencies are giving to families about what to do to protect their children. Last year on this panel, I gave a preview of an investigative report we were putting out about a piece of software called Computer Cop. We put it out basically, I think, 2 weeks after this panel.
I think it was the start of October.
Computer Cop is a piece of software that law enforcement agencies, like 250 plus law enforcement agencies around the country, had been giving out to families, telling them, quote, this is the first step to protect your children online. We handed this software over to our computer scientists at EFF, and what we discovered is that this software included keylogger technology that was transmitting the things you were typing to a third-party server, and who knows where that data was going after that. None of these police departments seem to have gone that deep into the software to see that's how it worked, but it was also transmitting this information unencrypted. So if your kid had this software on their computer and was sitting in a coffee shop, anybody with, you know, a free piece of software called a packet sniffer could literally grab your kid's conversations out of the air. And when we put this report out, some police departments immediately, you know, revoked the software, immediately sent out warnings to families saying, don't use the keylogger, do not install it. Some went into straight denial mode. I think the I think there was a sheriff in Alabama who said that my organization supports terrorists and pedophiles because we oppose the software. He claimed that his tech guy did a thorough review. Well, his tech guy is only a part-time tech guy. The rest of the time, he runs the police rodeo that actually funds the entire department. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm from Georgia, but I was just wondering why you mentioned the word Alabama.
Because that was where the sheriff was. Right. Am I not allowed to mention Alabama and Georgia? Is there some sort of rivalry?
Well, sometimes.
Yeah, and...
You need the mic.
Oh.
I have the mic here.
In Maricopa County, they also...
Famous for Sheriff Joe and his unconstitutional actions.
Right. So the Maricopa County Attorney's Office also put out this long letter saying all sorts of stuff about how we were ridiculous and we didn't understand it. And I put in a public records request to get all communications that they had about this software and how they went about buying it. And it turns out that they purchased this software not because someone in their child crime division asked for it, not because their cybersecurity investigators asked for it, but because their media relations PR guy got an email about it and he thought it would be a good PR campaign. And so then they got it. They ran it by one of their IT guys who just basically said, I did a quick look at it. It looks okay to me. And then they started distributing it. And they spent like $30,000 on this software and they couldn't even give out half of it. So not only was it bad for kids, it was bad for taxpayers as well. But beyond that, and I'll pass all along, other things that we've been working on lately are issues related to the types of, you'll probably notice a lot of schools are giving out tablets these days to kids, either making it mandatory. If your kid is in a school that this is happening, make sure you look over the privacy policy for this tablet. And if you need to go down to the school board and say, hey, what are you doing here? These privacy policies are ridiculous. Whether that's monitoring your kids, you know, all the time, collecting data on them and who they're selling that data to. These are important issues to look into to advocate for your kids. And beyond that, we've also seen a lot of very strange things with how police are prosecuting kids for so-called cyber crimes. The one that was most alarming the other day came from, am I allowed to mention North Carolina? Am I going to get in trouble if I mention North Carolina?
I'm just giving you a hard time.
So there's a case in North Carolina where the police...
The girl in the...
Yeah. So there's a case in North Carolina right now where the police were investigating what they thought was going to be child exploitation, and they went to some family that was not part of the investigation at all but may have been friends with somebody who was part of the investigation, and they asked the mother, can we look at your kid's device? She said, sure, look at it. And they looked at the devices, the 16-year-old boy, and they found that the 16-year-old boy had a nude picture of his 16-year-old girlfriend, and I think also vice versa. As a result, they are getting adult felony charges for child pornography for this. Because, I mean, it's like a weird sort of catch-22.
No.
They're kids, they're getting in trouble.
It's better than that. They are charging her as an adult for exploiting her... assaulting on a minor, which is the same person. So they're an adult for the prosecuting part, but as the victim side, they're a minor.
Yeah.
So they're trying to have it both ways at the same time.
So be very, very, very careful when police come asking to look at your children's devices. That's basically all the stuff that I have to say, and I can sort of pass
we'll
it
see
along.
You next week.
I can take questions, but I also want to make sure that I have now dumped everything in my head. I can pass on, and you guys can also do your brain dumps.
I was going to say something that I regretted to mention in my intro is that I also have a podcast. We call it our radio show because we're old. Every Monday at 6:30, and we're actually doing a show about the police's ability or inability to seize devices and what can happen whenever they actually find something on there. There was also a case of a guy who is being prosecuted right now in Maryland, I believe it is, for his GPS tracker on his phone. There was a rash of thefts, and they ended up they had a few suspects, but they subpoenaed the GPS records for this particular gentleman so that they could track. And since everywhere that he went matched everywhere that was hit, now they're prosecuting him for theft in all of these places, presumably because he was in the right and or wrong place at the right and or wrong time, depending on how you look at it. But yeah, it's absolutely frightening out there. I think that our laws are definitely not staying current and catching up or even staying with the current technology in regards to location devices, in regards to, you know, what information that we have out there, what's floating around out in the air because of, you know, Wi-Fi and other data transmission devices. It's absolutely frightening. And so, especially whenever it comes to your children, it is imperative that you keep a lockdown absolutely on their technology, how they use it, when they use it, who they use it around. Because as he said, a packet sniffer could have just snatched that out of the air, and you never know what you're going to find. You never know what pictures are going to go back and forth. And, you know, we think about kids on the internet, you know, small children, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, no, according to the law, your children are children until they turn 18. However, if they're doing things like what these gentlemen just talked about, which falls into the adult realm, depending on if, you know, I was asked this last night on another panel, will a prosecutor prosecute such and such sort of cases? Sounds like to me somebody's up for re-election.
Yeah, possibly.
Because there's a lot of the times the DAs will do it whenever they or their bosses or someone who they like want to prosecute these cases because they're up for re-election. And that's also a sad state of being in our country, that is the reason why somebody or kids like that are being prosecuted for, frankly, stuff that kids were doing, you know, show me mine, I'll show you yours and all of that. Or I guess we show you yours to show me mine, is now coming to the technical age. And so this is the sort of thing we have to watch out for, because now, before, where it may have just been fun and games before, now it can actually be criminally prosecuted.
And it's forever.
And one thing on the school devices, well, prior to them giving out tablets, they're giving out laptops. And a couple of years ago, a school actually got into trouble because they did have the ability to remotely access the webcams on the laptops. And it turned out that they were intentionally turning on these cameras in kids' rooms to make sure they weren't doing anything they weren't supposed to be doing. Now, these guys were off of school property. Granted, the laptop is school property, but they're at their home, they're not engaged in any sort of a school activity, and they were still being monitored by the school. And that one didn't take very long for them to lose that one, but...
Is that legal?
No.
No. No, that was in, I think it was North Carolina again, wasn't it?
Very, very light.
And, yeah, because the child had an absolute expectation of privacy. Mm-hmm. So unless the school got really slammed because they had no tangible reason to activate it in any case. They were only supposed to do that if it was reported stolen.
There was no probable cause. No, yeah. Absolutely not.
Right. And with that as well, it can get gray because like Dave was saying, check into the privacy things, because the privacy rule can say, yes, we can do this.
Absolutely.
It doesn't make it legal if it actually goes to court, but it creates a whole lot of gray area that the school can push back on hard and make life difficult for you, for your kid, and everything before it actually winds up in a court.
And you know, I say this all the time. I know it is a royal pain in the tuchus because it's not after 10 o'clock. I can't say what I would normally say, especially since
are there any over 18?
There's some little ones back there. I absolutely knew that. It's pain in the ass, all right? to sit there and read the terms of use and the conditions and all of this, and you know, you want to get to your game or your advice, and you have this big long list. Even if you don't read it immediately, even if you save it and then you read it later, once you click I accept, that's a contract. You know, they're saying this is the license that we have for you to use our software, our hardware, our whatever. When you click accept, then you are accepting, you're accepting their terms in order to have the license in order to use the property that you have purchased. Even if you've purchased it, it is still, if there's a license is applicable to the situation, you're still agreeing to use it under their terms, especially in a situation where there's a school.
Yep.
And you're using something that's not even your property. You know, it's on loan, so to speak. And that creates a contract. And if they do certain, okay, they're allowed to do certain things as long as it's within the law, because you can't create a contract that has illegal terms. But yes, as far as searching people, you know, and observing what it is that they're doing, that gets into constitutional issues and Fourth Amendment issues that, yeah, that is not exactly legal at all. So that part of the license would not necessarily be valid. However, there's a severability clause in most licenses, and what that means is that just because one part may not necessarily be legal, that doesn't negate the entire rest of the license. So you should definitely be on the lookout for that as well.
And part of that can include them doing things like scanning through the laptop for pictures to see if these kids are distributing naked pictures of classmates and whatnot. And so even
or
if
of anybody.
Of anybody, but I'm thinking classmates specifically because that kind of thing tends to go around schools.
Yeah.
So even if while viewing the webcam is illegal, searching through the files may well be legal because it's their property that you've agreed to use on their conditions and their terms. And if
and
you don't
no
like
reasonable
it,
expectation of privacy in the files.
Right.
So.
Got a question. Yeah.
So, wow, this is pretty cool. I've never seen a mic like this. I'm an engineer, but I'm in heat transfer, so I've never seen a catch box, so I'm a little confused. All right, so ADHD, right? We all know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us have it, maybe, because we're here. So I just wanted to make that disclaimer. I have a busy mind. Mm-hmm. So I've written down like 17 things here.
Alabama.
Alabama. Alabama's under the heading states. I was going to say first, ass is okay because that's a donkey. So you could say that before 10.
Right on.
The second thing is the states thing was a joke. So everybody relax. Because how many lawyers are in the room?
Well, one. At least one.
So we can all
say. Yeah, but I was originally from Alabama, so I won't tell.
Oh, man. Well, look, if it makes you feel any better, I went to school in Auburn. So,
but so did I.
But I was born in Griffin, Georgia. So
right on.
And I live in Macon, so let's just relax about the states, okay? North Carolina, Alabama, that's good. All right, and then the third thing was, you said laws can't keep up. Mm-mm. So you're into technology, I assume, because you're in the Electronic Frontiers Forum.
Bit.
And you're an Esquire, right?
Yes.
Esquire. Nobody else got that. Okay. So if most politicians are lawyers,
yeah.
Well, a lot.
65% at federal level.
Yeah.
They're certainly not janitors.
I mean, as opposed to engineers or medical
sure,
doctors
right.
or,
sure.
I mean, teachers. Or statesmen, we don't have any of those anymore.
Right.
So if most politicians are lawyers, may I say that?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
At the federal level, mm-hmm. 65%. And the laws aren't keeping up, mm-hmm. and you're an Esquire involved in both EFF and laws, then how do simple citizens or dumbass engineers, or sorry, that's a
we
donkey.
Call you lay people.
Come donkeys. How do we fix that problem?
Activism.
No. How do we fix the fact that law is like painfully slow and it's not logical
in
my engineering
lawyers.
Mind, and it takes forever.
Kill
and we go through case. I mean, how does the law keep up with life?
It doesn't. Law can never keep up with life. Law is always reactive.
Absolutely.
It really is activism.
So there's no such thing. Well, I thought we were in a, like an era of like
Do you really want proactive laws where they just decide, might be something on the moon. Let's start passing laws.
No, but like the Constitution is not the Constitution anymore, is it? I mean, it's just like this fluid document.
The Constitution is supposed to be a fluid document, though.
That's another discussion. But
we get the gist of your question, if we may.
Please.
The answer to your question is that's why I like practicing in a common law system, which is in England and in America. Ours is based off of their system. That means we have judge-made law. And I was actually, again, talking about this in the panel last night.
How legislators make law? I'm sorry. I don't understand that concept.
Okay, I'll divide it up really quickly for you. Civics 101. There are two ways that laws are made in the United States. One's by passing actual statutes, which absolutely the legislature does. That's the slower of the two processes. The other one is judge-made law, which is where there is a law or a lack of a law out there, and then someone brings a lawsuit about it, usually based on whether or not it's constitutional, although not necessarily, and then it goes through the systems, and theoretically, it eventually reaches the Supreme Court of the state courts or of the United States, and that's where it really happens. In the panel,
does the legislative process eventually, who's in the end of the judge?
The Supreme Court can trump Congress, but Congress can then pass new laws about that set new standards.
Precisely.
And that overrules the judges.
Well, if they set new legislation, and it can come back to then go back through the court system again to check on it. The courts are a check on the legislature.
If I may take this out of the realm of technology for just a moment, think about DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act. Bill Clinton originally passed it in the 90s. And then as people have brought suits in regards to it not being constitutional over and over and over. Just this last year in July, it was finally overturned and same-sex marriage was made legal. That would have never happened in the legislature because that would make some people's voters very unhappy. However, the Supreme Court said because of this Constitution is a living, breathing, and fluid document, it's absolutely dynamic and was never made to be static because our forefathers were had a little bit of sense as far as that was concerned, then it was finally changed. They said, yes, this, you know, making it where people cannot get married regardless of gender, that's unconstitutional, and that's how...
Like DOMA could be overthrown by a constitutional amendment that the people voted on, right?
Right, but that's a different...
The people are at the top of the hill.
Do you know when was the last time we had a vote and a constitutional amendment was repealed?
1992.
In modern society, it never happens. In the past, it happened a lot.
Exactly. So, frankly, because 40% of the populace votes, that ain't never going to happen. I'll give you an Alabama term right there. Ain't. It ain't never going to happen. If you want the law changed, be an activist. EFF, wonderful place. Depending on where your interests lie, there's several other groups. Write, seriously, I mean, you know, people hear all the time, write your congressman. You'd be surprised how much of a difference that can make. But be active in organizations such as this. You know, I always tell people that attorneys are the last people who fight on the front ends because we are the ones that get the judge-made law. As common people, that's what we can do. But even on a smaller scale than that, what you write, on a smaller scale than that, what you got?
That's my book.
Oh, right on. Well, there you go. Shameless self-promotion. But what you can do on an individual basis is protect your family. That's why panels like this is so important. And also, I mean, it's a brilliant question. It really is. But brilliant question, not necessarily the person asking it. But yes, get involved with people like the Electronic Frontiers Forum, grassroots efforts.
No, the foundation, not the forum.
Forum. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, the foundation too, and the forum for that matter. Come and listen and learn. Yes, thank you. I apologize. But grassroots efforts, you would be surprised what gets done. I mean, look at the amount of momentum that the gentleman from Vermont has gotten, who's running for president right now, and I would have never thought that he would even be possible for him to have, you know, that sort of momentum. But here's the thing. It takes people getting off their asses and doing something about it and not just sitting around in a panel complaining about it.
Mm-hmm. Think about the absurdity of it all for these politics. Forget about the politics for a moment. If we could just, like, forget the left and the right and the Democrats and the Republicans, right, which are our biggest problem, I think. You know, Donald Trump, oh, my God. And then
yes,
Bernie.
Oh my God, indeed.
And then Bernie. Oh my God, I'm sorry, that's offensive. But both of them, I'm like, wow. It's just mind-boggling to me who we end up with as presidential candidates in terms of a statesman. I mean, in terms of people who really like love the people and hate politics and hate the corruption in our government, I'm just astonished those two are going to be the ones, Trump, I guess, going head to head. I mean, I don't know.
We're kind of getting off topic, but I know Trump really is kind of symptomatic of some of the corruption that is in, and I think he's kind of emblematic of
it. I'm not advocating for Trump or Bernie or Hillary or whoever. I'm just saying it's astonishing to me. Like, we used to have people like, I don't know, people I admired, George Washington. I mean, he had flaws, or Thomas Jefferson, or, I mean, our so-called founding fathers that you were admiring earlier that built this living constitution.
Living, breathing document.
Yeah, DC for a little while. And they did some stuff, but they really weren't politicians. They were farmers and other things. So what happened to the people running the government? Why did it become politicians running the government?
Sounds like he needs to write a blog.
But I mean, if I can jump in and answer some of these questions. So in terms of politics and changing law and you know, making the law catch up with technology, I think, you know, EFF, the foundation, not the forum, we definitely are trying to push Congress as much as possible, but Congress is very, very slow, and yet you see more on the state level with state legislatures are able to act very, very fast, and you've seen the state legislatures pass a lot of laws, and they don't necessarily always get the technology either.
Very rarely.
Yeah. However, I mean, what I find interesting, we're based in California, and because some of the major the largest tech companies are based in California. A law that passes in California that affects those companies basically affects the rest of the world. So, you know, the reason you see privacy policies at the bottom of websites is in part because California passed a law saying that if you have a site that collects information from Californians, you have to have a privacy policy. There is a law that passed in California that lets children, if a child passes posts something on their website and wants to remove it, the company has to remove it. So that's another way that things get done. But, you know, one of the other solutions is just technology, coming up with technological ways to protect and just, you know, not worrying about
that's
politics
really back,
at all.
Backdoor way of doing it until the law catches up.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you had a question.
I had more of a practical question. Like, so, you know, I've got kids, or even just for myself, you know, if I'm not as educated about, you know, what technologies are out there, you know, tracking me or might be a security risk. Could you tell me, like, in your personal lives, like, what is your either top one or two or three, or you know, what are the things that you do personally to protect yourself, considering, you know, in a very practical way, because you have a lot of knowledge about what the security risks are out there?
Well, first you have to be willing to give up some services. So, for example, they're mentioning the GPS case. The way to stop that happening is to turn off your GPS. But that means things like your Apple Maps or Google Maps aren't going to work.
Or even just the weather thing at the top of this. You know, it doesn't update for me where the weather is or how. So
that's GPS the first thing is if you want to go down that path, which is a good one, you have to be willing to give up some certain things. Because the trade-off is they're providing a service in exchange for something from you. If it's not money that they're getting from you, it's going to be something that, of you that they can sell, which in this case is your location, you know, tracking your progress around the city or that sort of thing. Go ahead.
So EFF has a website that we launched a few months back called Surveillance Self-Defense. And a lot of it is based on this idea of threat modeling, which is looking at your life and thinking, well, who are my adversaries? Who do I need to protect against? The methods that somebody who is a national security journalist or an activist in Iran are going to be different than the needs of somebody who is, say, a librarian or a student. And so it's important to make that evaluation for your life and then start picking things appropriately. So for me, I work for a free speech organization that, you know, some of my coworkers have had, you know, spear phishing attacks against them by foreign governments, or, you know, recently somebody created a fake website of our based on our website to try to hack other people. So my security risks are going to be much different than yours. But Surveillance Self-Defense, the site, which I believe is EFF.org/SSD, we'll actually walk you through the process of threat modeling, and then based on what your needs are, we'll suggest basic, you know, protections. So, you know, the one right off the bat for, you know, basically everybody is the next time you log onto Facebook, go to the privacy settings and start flipping off switch on things.
Yeah.
You know, like, because they'll default on a lot of these like invasive things, and you just got to go in and shut them off. And you got to go in and say, oh man, I installed this app or this game, you know, 4 years ago, and I forgot to uninstall it. You got to uninstall it because, you know,
they get your information every, I think it's 14 days or something. They refresh up. Do a refresh pull from Facebook for your information if they're allowed to.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of these apps, you know, they're able to change their terms of service and their privacy policies, you know, quite regularly. And what you signed up for 4 years ago is not necessarily what you're getting today.
It may not even be the same company anymore. It may have just switched hands and just kept the name, different program, different
and the things. Licenses do transfer whenever that happens.
Right.
And I tell people all the time, just as a parent and as somebody who's been using technology longer than I care to admit, is, you know, it's just like any other thing that you clean in your house for your family. It's maintenance. Go through and check these privacy settings that they're talking about periodically, whether you choose to be once a week, once a month, whatever the case may be, because as he said, it does change. And something that you installed 4 years ago or some cute app that you wanted to take a quiz from or something like that, you'd be surprised at the data that they're gathering as a result of that. And so go through and do a house cleaning, however periodically their website would recommend. And it's a maintenance that you would do for your family just like anything else.
Yeah, we refer to digital hygiene a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically, you know, you with your, I just spoke about Facebook, but with your phone, just going through it and looking at the apps you installed and seeing what you've just actually visually checking what you've authorized these things to do, say in locational services, and only, you know, turn off. I mean, I use Google Maps all the time, and that's one of the few things that I allow locational services for. There are certain apps that I will turn on locational services for a short period of time, and then I'll turn them off again. There are certain apps that I will not allow to access my broadband or my data services unless I actually want to, and I manually go turn it on, use it what I need to use it for. Say I'm at a conference and I need to use a particular app for that conference, shut it off right afterwards, because they will, you know, over time, and they're aggregating this stuff and they're selling it and, you know, trading it, and companies will get bought, and next thing you know, there are profiles out you there that creditors can buy and insurers can buy to find out, you know, information about you.
And they're talking a lot about after the fact, but remember, there's things we can do beforehand. I mean, how many people in here have sat here and taken the quiz recently? What did you look like in your past life on Facebook? You know, my husband did it. It was cute. I decided to do it. I clicked on it, and it said, go and see what it is that this app is allowed to look at. I go in there, and it wanted all sorts of information just to do this stupid little 5-second quiz. Check, 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 check. You can still take the stupid little quiz and get the cutesy little result all you want to, but you can limit what it is that they're taking in the first place. You know, there's nothing wrong with being, you know, having your hygiene after the fact, but you can also be proactive before the fact as well. You know, forewarned and forearmed and all that. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely be smart beforehand.
Yeah, and I won't install any app that says it's gonna access my friends list.
Yeah.
Like, no, I just don't, I mean, that's, and I know other people are doing that, and you know, suddenly you're getting spammed about things and you're wondering how that happened. It's because somebody else did that.
The other advantage of digital hygiene is that you're always aware of what you're giving out, because a lot of sites that you're logging into, Facebook logins become almost a generic login option. Mm-hmm. And if you regularly do digital hygiene, you're aware of exactly what your current settings are. So if a app asks you, you know, do you want to log in, mm-hmm. you're aware of what you're giving up from the get-go then. You're not sort of guessing, or you're not just blindly giving them permission to do it. The way I normally get around that is simply by setting up fake profiles. And the only thing that I use those for is things like logging in for games and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite happy to let them share my friends list because there's no one on it and there never will be.
But to bring this back to children, you know, it's hard for us, people who are coming to a lot of these new technologies as adults, to get in the habit of these things. But it's relatively easy, I think, with, you know, it's like hard to learn to start brushing your teeth every day at the age of 40. But, you know, you ingrain these things to people at a young age, and then they know, okay, this is something I got to check on a regular basis. These are things I need to worry about. Then, you know, maybe you have an impact in the long term as technology develops and creepier things are invented.
Teaching a different kind of hygiene.
Have you guys
really?
seen the latest Windows app, the Windows 10 advert, mm-hmm. that says, you know, like, oh, this child will be interfacing with the internet. Right. They'll be logging on with a smile.
They'll
sort
never
of thing.
Have to worry about this ever again.
Mm-hmm. And it's true. No. Those kids are going to grow up with that, and with a lot of their life being on, you know, being online, mm-hmm. Which for most of us in this room was never an issue because we never had that much connectivity before. So there's definitely a mindset, and for parents especially, you have to get into that mindset. So in many ways, it actually helps you think like a kid would, mm-hmm. and basically try and act out like they would as far as that and see what you can get through, and then start blocking yourself off from those things. Because you can always re-enable them again for yourself later, but you get a much better idea of what's going on with your kids. And the other thing is to remember that no matter how well you do that, you're always going to be lagging behind your kids, because kids share information like it's going out of fashion. And where you're thinking of one thing, they've got an entire school thinking of multiple things. And as soon as one figures out a way, it's going to get shared around the entire school. So same thing like with the dirty pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, if someone takes a nude picture, sends it to a boyfriend or sends it to his girlfriend, more than once we've heard about that picture then making the rounds and, you know, half the school wanting them in detention because, you know, they're all being charged with child pornography because they got a naked picture on their phone, mm-hmm. which they may have never even asked for because someone just mass tweeted or mass messaged everyone. And suddenly you've got a picture on your phone that can make you criminally liable.
So that was a good segue. I teach a sixth grade computer science class. Mm-hmm. And so I want to know, what would you recommend, at least is the bare minimum, that these sixth graders need to know to protect themselves? And also, you know, what is a probably appropriate at, you know, the 12-year-old age, because there are a lot of things I can't discuss, at least directly.
Yeah, I got an 11 and a 13-year-old, so I know this really, really well. My sixth and eighth grade. So, first of all, addresses, personal addresses. Never give it out. In fact, I specifically have a P.O. box, and my kids know that if there's anything ever they need, you know, then, you know, friends contact them, you know, actual friends that they know, things like that. Use the P.O. box for online. Even if, you know, they know them in school and stuff, P.O. box. So our home address is never online.
So you literally pay for a P.O. box?
Yes.
At the post office?
Yeah, it's $33 for 6 months. And it's
worth it.
It's worth it. Because another problem I have is I've sometimes been targeted by hackers. Jeremy Hammond, the guy who did the Stratfor attack, is not a fan of me. So earlier this year, some of his anonymous friends decided to try and swat me and DDoS me, but they couldn't get hold of me. My phone number is a redirected one from Florida, a custom one. My only address online is a P.O. box, so it's very hard to swat me or attack me. And the same goes for my kids. There's no link between my account on Facebook, for instance, the one I use for a lot of my work and my stuff, and my kids, so there's nothing to tie me to them and them to me.
So
also for their safety.
So they can't have a postal website and find where you really are?
It's not kept online. It's kept on paper records at the post office, as far as I'm aware. It's not connected to the web.
And now, bearing in mind, he's got to go through a lot more effort than most of you folk in the room would have to go through. It's got more than most of what I do. I'm not particularly a target of anyone that I'm aware of. That may happen in the future. But what's appropriate for him may not always be appropriate for you, so you guys may not need to go to that level.
But
just be aware that it can
be. It's always a good idea to have a post office box just for any kind of mail things. If nothing else, you don't get so many random parcels so much, because the post office will often screen them out, and it's 24-hour access. It's nice and easy.
I live in an apartment complex, and anytime I need to do that, I always give them the apartment complex's address, not actually my address within the apartment complex. Now, if I'm actually ordering something, obviously I give them my address. But again, then I'm not at the level he is. But if it's just something like, we need your address because we want to check on whether we offer service in your area, I always give the front office address, because there's nothing then that can, other than, well, you gave me an address and you may or may not live in this complex. So there's nothing really to tie me to that particular address at all. And if they feel like swamping it, well, that becomes my leasing company's problem, not mine.
Okay. Another thing to
So this isn't necessarily a position of my organization, but just sort of my personal thoughts. I just want to be clear about that. I think it's important to teach people that what you do online has real world consequences. I think that you know, we get calls all the time about the issue of swatting, like the calling the SWAT a SWAT team on somebody else, and I think that is something that's easy to do, that people do, that don't necessarily appreciate the actual reality of what it is. But it is also, you know, just the posting of you know, posting naked pictures of somebody online, or the online bullying, or whatever. It's because it's so easy sometimes to just post things online, because you don't see the facial expression that somebody has, and you don't see the anguish that's caused, and you don't see the, you know, people going into therapy because of it. And trying to make that leap between that there are consequences in the real world for the things that you do online.
There's also the history aspect as well, because what happens today and goes online today can still be accessed 2 years from now, 4 years from now. And one of the most popular targets of swatters right now are gamers. And people live streaming their games, people try and swat them midstream. So that happened recently. And the big danger is, as we saw in, was it Gwinnett County? Just a few days ago, where they raided the wrong house and shot the guy's dog and shot another officer, and that was just, you know, a couple of miles away. It was a SWAT team raid that was hilariously wrong in every way that was bad.
Yeah, and I've heard the advice given that if you do find yourself in a position where your family is getting bullied, whether that's by, you know, people at the school or by just general trolling online, a good thing to do is to you know, call your police department and let them know that this, you know, that if they get a call for a kidnapping or a hostage situation, that they should be cautious before they send a SWAT team over because it may not be a real thing.
There's a really good article online. I think it's if you Google the day I faced my internet troll, which is about a reporter who actually feared for his life because he started getting threatening mails. He started getting things like, you know, dead flowers delivered to his house. He started getting, I think there was one where he got like a box of ashes and said, this could be your family, completely freaking him out. And it turns out it was the kid of a friend of the family. And the kid had no idea that he was causing this much issue. The kid thought it was just funny. It's like, oh, well, you know, I can get away with this. And the kid, well, when they eventually sat down, the parents were like, you know, do whatever you need to do. You know, if you're going to press charges, we understand. He chose not to in the long run, but it's a really good look at how kids are really just stupid in some cases, because there was no real malicious intent behind the child. He was just stupid and unaware of just how much damage this was causing.
I think this...
I'm a parent. I have a daughter, same age as you do. So I'm thinking of two kinds of tools that I'm going to need soon. One is proactive software that's something
kind of site blocking sort of thing.
Sorry?
You mean like site blocking?
Yeah, like I don't know if Net Nanny is still around. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. But so anyway, I'd like to get your recommendation on that, and just to what, you know, I want to prevent, you know, block certain sites. The other is kind of big brother, but I'm her parent. Reactive software that if she's on Minecraft or whatever, and she starts chatting with someone, and she thinks she's chatting with another 12-year-old. Obviously, we don't know that. Something that would let me know, hey, there's a possibly dangerous conversation going on here. So either of those kind of tools, can you?
Let me ask you, what kind of conversations are you having with your daughter about these issues before even going to the software?
Yeah, right. We've talked about it. We've been to the safety courses. We know, but still, she's very bright,
no,
but she can eat. Sorry,
there's no real software that can do. Certainly not the latter one, because
really nothing like
short of the NSA, nobody's really got the computing power to actively process, you know, communications in real time. So, I mean,
so there's nothing like if she's doing an outgoing communication.
Not that I'm aware of.
In terms of verifying who the person is on the other end.
Or just monitoring what's being said.
If you simply want to monitor what's
being said, you can't screen it because you don't know the nature of the conversation.
A lot of the time, yeah, because one of the things I do is, especially also going to the first one, is there's a lot of, I work a lot of BitTorrent sites.
Sorry?
I work a lot of peer-to-peer sites and BitTorrent sites. Okay. Now, a lot of courts around the world are requiring that certain sites like the Pirate Bay be blocked now in the country. And they've tried to block them, and even using the courts telling the ISPs themselves to block the sites, they're not being able to block the sites. So any, you know, $20 program you're going to buy from anywhere online, just working on your computer, has got absolutely no chance at all of trying to block access to any kind of site. I mean, if a national court system with the ISP themselves blocking the site aren't going to stop the traffic, then, you know, your thing on a computer has just got no chance at all.
Okay, so you're telling me that there's absolutely
not much in the first case.
Okay, so that we
if the child wants to get around it, they're going to get around it. So
I'm not talking about her actively trying to get her. I'm talking about her inadvertently logging onto something. So we've already established there's no reactive kind of software.
Not really.
What kind of proactive software is out there that, like Net Nanny used to be or whatever, that you would recommend just to keep her from inadvertently getting onto white supremacist, violent, whatever?
I mean, but what do you do in the real world about that sort of thing?
Like accidentally turning.
I mean, that's what I'm just curious, because it's like.
Like I said, we've already had that kind of a conversation with her. I'm just worried more about. That's not 100%. I'd rather add something on top of that to just screen out sites that are known to be not good for kids.
What you're looking for is not really the name of a software package, but you're looking for what to look within software, because there's any number of things that can do this. Some are plugins for browsers, some are standalone programs, some are manual things you can do. Essentially, what you're looking to do there is probably filtering. Two things. One is filtering. Right. So you can look for filtering software. Sometimes it'll be part of a firewall or an antivirus suite. Other times it'll be a standalone program. Other times it'll be something like replacing your host's file on your computer, which is like a little built-in DNS thing that I use for advertising. And essentially what it does is you can download these lists off the internet, really, and it pretty much lists all the known, say, ad blocking sites or adware sites. And so every time my computer tries to access something, like on CNN, you'll see a lot of this little click here, like a promoted link or something. A lot of those are on my computer are blocked because it goes from a host's file, which points it back to my computer, which is obviously not going to work. So what you're looking for there is basically filtering, as far as that goes. Now, to actually monitor the conversations themselves, again, you're probably your best bet is going to be a keylogger, but you are going to run into some issues with privacy there, because while you do have expanded rights, and I think you can expand on that, you do have expanded rights as a parent, there are still certain limits. And it's also a very manual process. It's not an easy process to go through simply because of the amount of what you're basically going through. A key logger does exactly what it says. Every stroke of the key is logged. But it doesn't actually mean that what they're doing is going to be contiguous. So they may be going through 3 or 4 different conversations, chatting, and you're going to pretty much just get the sequence of keys that was pressed, which may be completely nonsensical.
Especially if they're playing a game like Minecraft in the middle of it. You've got all the movement keys and action keys at the same time.
Right.
And other types of monitoring could also run into legal problems as well, in terms of various states' wiretap acts and intercepting conversations between other people. Even if California, for example, is an all-party state in terms of monitoring conversations.
And Illinois as well.
Yeah, and so you could run into a lot of problems if you were intercepting a conversation between your daughter and somebody else, if that somebody else doesn't know that you're a party.
I don't think I'm willing to go to the level of key logging. However, if I would want to know if, say, she's chatting with somebody on Minecraft, which is fine with me, and then that person says, hey, you want to talk about this more, let's go to this chat room. It seems like, even though I wouldn't be monitoring the actual conversation, it seems like there would be software out there that says, your daughter has now accessed a chat site. That's kind of like NetNanny, that there's sites out there. I guess it goes back to the filtering. Can filtering, does it normally address groups or classify, say, chat rooms?
Yes, but you'll be pretty much shutting down their entire computer then. Because the folk who are doing this know exactly that. So they go to the applications the kids use anyway. So let's say they're on Snapchat. Your daughter may use for 5 years, use Snapchat just to talk with her friends. Then she meets someone else, like you say, on Minecraft, they'll go to Snapchat as well, or to Vimeo or whatever there.
Or Kick, or YouNow, or any of the other
things,
just do that. I mean, what was it used to be? Omegle used to be well known for, and Stick'em for, it used to be like a two-way video chat, and it ended up more like Chat Roulette, which is, as many people know, is kind of famous for the very one-sided nature of a lot of the participants on there.
It'll definitely tell you, yes, your daughter's accessed this, but the problem is she'll be accessing
you
it all day long.
You don't know on Snapchat if it was good and who's bad. So what do you, other than educating your kids, what do you do?
I was going to bring on to the other problem with that is if you'll start monitoring them, a lot of the times if they find out, that can breed resentment. Because that was one of the biggest things. I've experimented a lot, and sometimes in my research I'll try programs out on my kids, often without telling them, as a kind of a blind.
I'm just going to shake my head.
It's okay. My kids aren't here this year. My eldest was here.
I just have strong feelings against normalizing your kids to surveillance. You know.
Well, I'm not normalizing. I'm testing to see how they'd break it as a kind of blind.
Well, that's better.
as a blind test to see how they survive against it. But my eldest last year talked about how sometimes, when she thought I was being just overbearing on certain things, it bred resentment, and how she felt I was being overly intrusive. But she was 17 at the time, and it can be, it can end up making things worse, because then they become more secretive if they think you're watching.
Okay, so what's the happy medium between e-logging and not doing
anything? That's something that's definitely you got to work. That's something you got to definitely work out between.
And that,
you,
and
that's a very, very specific to
you. That's the extent of what you do. You don't do any kind of filtering or anything.
No, I don't actually do any filtering or monitoring or anything. At best, I'll sometimes do a very quick snap check on my kids. I'll say, okay,
what
hey.
Is that?
I'll say, hey, pass me the tablet, okay, I'll do a quick browse in the history. They know that, you know.
Okay, that's the sort of thing I was, kind of advice I was looking for.
Yeah,
I heard key logging's bad, so now I'm going to do nothing at all. That's what I'm looking for.
No, so, yeah, sorry. It's, okay. But yeah, just, you know, kind of, it's more of a trust thing than everything else. If you build up trust and, you know, thing, so, but a lot of the times hiding the programs incites a sort of us versus them mentality, and that can end up then attempting to subvert them just for teenage rebellion, if nothing else, and to show that they can be smarter than you. And yeah, my kids have tried that and they've failed every time.
Okay. All right, thanks.
And you always run into a major issue if someone else is using their device and you're capturing something on there.
Yeah, and that goes back to
if someone else uses their phone or something, like if they go to a friend's house and their friend happens to use something there,
that runs afoul of privacy issues, is what they're saying.
And violation. The school and the web.
Yeah, I mean, if your daughter can walk into a Safeway, or I don't know what you have around here, but a grocery store Kroger and go up and buy a burner smartphone on her own, then there's nothing you can do at that point. I mean,
that's not an issue. I'm more interested, it's to look at her browser history and see what she's doing.
Mm-hmm. I'm an IT professional. I've been working 18 years securing networks. And what you're talking about, what you're wanting, is that what we call blacklisting and whitelisting. I can try to think of it like a party, and you have a list of names of people you don't want to come in. Are you on the list? Oh, okay. Well, you can come in since you're not on the list. It's really difficult to stop people or stop bad sites. You can't possibly list them all. You can't possibly list all the ways. You wind up having to create a white list. Who is allowed to come in? And that becomes really restrictive. So you say, you know, these are the 10 websites my kids can go to, and that's it. And you'll get into that us versus them thing. But I run into the same thing in the corporate level when I've got nurses who want to do their Facebook and infect my machines with viruses. I have to
of the wrong kind.
Yeah. Right. So it's this sort of battle of, do I take away their freedom and go into this idea of you're allowed to go to these sites so that I don't have to work so hard to get the viruses off my machines, or some kind of trust thing? And it's gonna, but the difference is between blacklisting and whitelisting. So if you're thinking about some kind of blacklisting program, which will never be able to keep up with the threats.
It's definitely the thing. And the other aspect for keeping kids safe is, of course, y'all, the parents. All y'all, in fact, to use a southern
term. All y'all, that's right.
Right. But there was a study recently, Nominet, the people who run the UK domain name space, they have a child protection research unit, and they noted how many here you take pictures of their kids and post them on Facebook.
Right.
Yep. No, a few people.
That's something I was going to bring up about.
Yeah. They ran a study. Apparently, 36% of parents who post pictures of their kids don't even bother to even check the privacy status of it, so that they're public. And they'll tag their kids if their kids have got a profile and stuff. So even if the kid does everything right, the parent can end up being the one screwing up. Or not just the parent, the grandparent, the uncle, the aunt. It all becomes there's no one solution to everything. There's no golden bullet or anything. It's a
process.
Total approach to thinking about security in a way that a lot of people don't, because they think it's digital and it's ephemeral and it doesn't really matter that much. And then the next thing you know, you've got a SWAT team coming through your thing, or you're being pizza bombed, which is when, you know, somebody calls up every pizza place and the thing says, once you have 20 pizzas delivered, you'll pay when it's delivered. And the guy wants a tip. So it's, you've got to worry about these things. And people do it for a joke. Kids will do it for a joke. They don't know, you know.
And even that aside, there's one case where a parent had lost her child like a year or so before. and she was traveling down in Mexico and saw a billboard of her child up for advertising something. And it had been a picture she had posted to Facebook. And whatever company down there had found this picture, thought it was it would work for them, copied it down and stuck it up on a billboard. Now I imagine, you know, you've just lost your child and you're driving down and suddenly your her picture's all over the billboards somewhere else.
So we are...
Can you just share with the parents about turning off location services on your iPhone camera or your smartphone camera?
I don't actually have a smartphone, neither do my kids.
Y'all do know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, can you please share that? Because not everybody's aware of that.
Right, so you can go into the settings on your phone. I can only talk to an iPhone, and you can go to your settings, and there is a thing that says locational settings, and it will have all of the apps you've installed, and it'll have a little switch, and you can flip it from green to not green, and that's it. It's as simple as that.
But why is that important to parents?
So it's important to parents because you have all of these services that are owned by who knows who that are tracking all the places that your kid goes and creating patterns of their behavior. It's the same problem for adults as it is for kids.
The reason is they have a picture
of your kid.
Yes.
Then they can pull the GPS data from the metadata
of it.
With
free software, if you post a picture of your kid playing in the backyard on Facebook and you haven't turned that off, I can easily pull that picture down, get some free software, and get a GPS location of where that camera was when the picture was taken. That's bad.
The tag you're looking for is EXIF data.
Right. EXIF data, yeah. And it's any image
program. But as a parent, I don't need to know EXIF data. It's very important to turn that off.
Right.
So everybody
It
does other things as well, EXIF. It tells the model of the camera and...
Yeah.
Well, it's nifty as well.
Other things, but.
Knowing that you can go and download things to actually do random checks and see if maybe the kids turn it back on again.
Yeah.
You know, grab one of the pictures and see is there EXIF data in this particular picture. Yeah.
But we do have to wrap up.
Yeah, we do.
Huh? But
can you guys answer one last thing?
Can we answer it after or off the stage?
If it's less than 10 seconds, we can.
Yeah, just 10 seconds. Your top three recommendations on filtering software.
No filtering software.
They don't work. You.
Yeah. Good parenting skills. There you go. One, two, and three.
Communication with the kids.
I don't have kids, but a lot of my family does, and I'm a family nerd. Where can we go? Where some research can we go to find out what kinds of dangers are out there for kids? I'll give you an example. There's a lady in Blount County, the public official, posted a video that was demonstrating an app that kids are using, calculator app, but it's actually a secret photo.
Calculator gallery. The calculator gallery, it's some people have said it. I've not heard it much being in the wild, except from the sensationalized from the press releases.
Sorry, but, I know I'm really...